What do you think is going on in patients when they're presented with scenarios, as has been done in breast cancer and colon cancer, of, you know, here's a situation where you can take chemotherapy and there's a 1% reduction in relapse rate? What do you think is going on in patients' mind that they want to be treated in that situation?
I think what's going on is that patients are answering a question related to confidence and hope. And for a patient hearing that there is a 1% absolute benefit from a therapy may be responding with the confidence that they believe they are going to be that one. And so we found in our own work that patients with metastatic disease have a much higher expectation or express a much higher expectation for benefit from treatment than their oncologists expect for them. But whereas the oncologist might be making a population frequency estimate, the patient is using the information they understand about the population frequency estimate and layering on top of that their hope for personal benefit and their confidence that they will be the one who benefits in expressing their very high expectation of benefit. So a patient, when making a decision, may hear all the statistics, but in the end be making a decision based on their confidence that they're going to be one of the lucky ones. That said, that doesn't mean that's a bad decision, but it means that there might be an explanation for why doctors and patients express that they would make different decisions under the same circumstances.
Based on what you're saying, I mean, do you view that kind of decision? You said that would be potentially a rational decision, but you know, if you are expecting to be one out of 100, that really isn't rational.
It's a very difficult question. I don't think it's fair to be placing a value judgment on a patient's decision when they say, I would do this for a 1% out of 100 chance that it will benefit me. In that circumstance, the effort undertaken to be absolutely certain that the patient understands the risk of death and long-term toxicity from therapy is clear, is really essential. So when I'm faced with patients who are pushing for therapies in various different situations that I think I might otherwise advise against because of marginal benefit, it just takes that much more convincing of me that the informed consent process has been adequate for me to go ahead and do that. And yes, have I been in situations where I've given therapy to someone where I felt that the potential benefit was extremely small and the potential for harm much greater? Absolutely. But in those situations, it's taken a tremendous deal of effort and convincing of me by the patient that this is a decision based on adequate and exemplary informed consent.
Maybe it's a simplified way of looking at it, but I kind of visualize this as, well, maybe the patient just has this paralyzing fear that is causing them to make really an irrational decision, a decision where they're actually putting themselves at greater total health risk. Or another phenomenon I've heard patients express and physician is this concept of not leaving any stone unturned, so that if they do develop a recurrence, they know that they've done everything they could to try to avoid that, which is a concept that, you know, kind of actually makes sense, although maybe it doesn't make sense numerically. And that maybe the patient's perception of this is fundamentally different than somebody who doesn't have cancer.
Well, patients might be operating under a regret theory type of decision-making scenario where, as you suggest, a patient is making a decision that minimizes the potential that down the line they're going to say, I wish I would have done X, Y, or Z. In those situations, one of the ways we can help as physicians is to give them an out. To get them off the hook, to say, look, it's really okay not to pursue this therapy because the potential for harm to you is so great, and I wouldn't do it. If you were my wife, this is not something I would want you to do. That often gives patients the comfort to not pursue such a therapy.
You're obviously very aware of what we found in the survey of patients as well as physicians and clinical investigators. The two major findings being that we saw a substantial number of people who said they would want to be treated again with the same therapy they've had for as little as a 1% improvement in relapse-free survival, as well as the fact that they found a discrepancy in terms of what they experienced with chemotherapy compared to what they expected. What do you think the message is from this for the practicing oncologist?
I think that the message for practicing oncologists is that you've got to assess what the trade-off calculus is for your individual patient, because everybody's different. And some patients will require a lot more bang for their buck with regard to benefit versus toxicity. Other patients are not requiring a lot more benefit for the same level of toxicity for a particular therapy. And so different patients are making different decisions based on the potential benefits and potential hazards. And it's incumbent upon us to make our best assessment of where a patient stands along that continuum. The most provocative implication of these data is that there's a significant minority of patients who would wish to receive toxic therapy with potential long-term side effects for an extremely small benefit in absolute terms.
Do you think that that's sort of news to oncologists?
I don't know that it's news to oncologists per se, but it highlights something that's out there and reinforces for oncologists that we need to be more in tune to our patients' calculus with regard to risks and benefits.
Do you think there's any difference in the way oncologists approach a patient with colorectal cancer compared to breast cancer in that regard?
Well, I think historically there has been a greater willingness to give adjuvant therapy in breast cancer for smaller benefits. And there may be a component of how breast cancer specialists or thought leaders approach the disease versus colon cancer oncologists, or it may be a perception about the decision-making of women with breast cancer as being different than other diseases. It may be that there historically has been more success earlier on with adjuvant therapy in breast cancer, and colon cancer lagged behind for many years until the first positive colon cancer adjuvant study came along. And so it may be that we're behind in that regard. And it may be the fact that in colon cancer, there haven't been the large studies of the size that one sees in breast cancer to show these extremely small benefits in a prospective randomized study.